Welcome to Flame On. This is Brian the Bear. I have the question sitting right here next to me. And on our magic Skype-a-phone, we have David Reddish from the amazingly, semi-true story of sex, drugs, and superheroes. Howdy, David.
What's going on, guys?
We are excited to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
It's my pleasure. It's awesome.
I've certainly been following a little bit about your stuff since that was announced, and then some of our listeners may also know that you were responsible for Shit Gay Geeks Say.
That's right. That's true.
And that is you doing your best riff on that whole meme, which, though it was late to the party, I still think it's one of my favorites. But,
oh, well, thank you. You know, I was late to the party, and it still keeps me from getting dates. So what can I say? Put it all online, and then, you know.
Now, in truth, have you actually had someone say, oh, my God, dude, you're that guy?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I have, actually.
Awesome.
This is funny. I called to book my hotel room for Comic-Con, and I have some back channels that I use there. And I called the concierge and gave her my name, and, oh my gosh, you're that guy crying about the Ewoks.
Oh,
great. This is the indelible mark I've left on society, that I'm the guy bawling about Ewoks on YouTube.
Oh, well, it's adorable, so don't feel bad. I'm sure it'll pay off for you in some ways down the road. I don't know.
The furries are going to love it.
Oh, God, we got some furry listeners out there, too.
We do.
Okay. So that's, of course, out there on YouTube. Please check it out if you haven't. You guys are missing out. And it's actually up on the Flame On Facebook page. We posted that, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago-ish? Anyway. Let's hear about the book, because this is something very timely to when we're recording this. We were actually recording this on the Sunday before Comic-Con in San Diego. And this book I get is very much to do with some of your experiences at other San Diego cons. Is that where this kind of draws from, or?
Yeah, and oh gosh, you guys are going to get me in trouble with the first question. Okay,
you don't have to. You don't have to admit what's true.
Well, you know, it's based on my experiences at Comic-Con, and it's definitely informed by things I've experienced and my friends have experienced and sort of seen and done. Nobody in the book is like based on a single person. None of the characters are based on a single person. And, you know, not all the events happen to all the same people, and not all of them happen all at the same time. That's sort of rearranged for, like, dramatic effect. But, it's not so much factual as it is, I suppose, true in spirit to what the experience of Comic-Con is like. So,
okay. Well, that's fair
well
enough.
Well said, yes.
Yeah, you dance beautifully around that.
Thank you.
Well, like any good writer, I mean, a lot of it's drawn on personal experience and things that you've read about, and all big one collage of stuff. So, I don't know. Let's see. I've never been to San Diego, I admit. I know Q has. We just came back from Heroes Con, which is nothing like San Diego, I'm sure, but still lots of fun.
Yeah, there's actually a lot going on in this book. What's the tagline? It's Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, colon... There's more to it.
The subtitle, it's a savage journey into a wretched hive of scum and supervillainy.
Nice.
There you go. And that paints a more accurate picture, I think, of San Diego Comic-Con what kind of stuff the book goes into.
It's a great Star Wars quote, at least. I mean, yeah. just...
Well, it's the multiple illusion. I mean, you got half of it, but I have yet to meet anyone that's actually gotten both pieces. So.
Huh.
Oh, there's another...
One or the other.
Well, say it again.
They get one or the other. It's two different, illusions.
What is the tagline again?
Savage journey into a wretched hive of scum and supervillainy.
Yeah, I don't get the other one.
Savage journey.
It's the savage part?
The savage journey. It's actually, if I tell you, the earliest working title for this book was Fear and Loathing at Comic-Con. That may give you a tip-off.
Oh, nice. Okay, it's a Hunter Thompson thing. Okay.
Yeah. Hunter Thompson and Gonzo journalism, you know, going back to your earlier question about how much of it's true, how much of it really happened, Gonzo journalism, not all those things happened to Hunter Thompson, but it was sort of being true to the spirit of what he experienced, you know. He was writing fiction, but it was sort of suggested by real life, so.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I totally missed that, and I love Hunter Thompson, so I feel shamed.
So let's dive right into it with... Well, first of all, you gay.
you know, as the great Margaret Cho would say, I'm just slutty.
Nice.
I'll do anything, whatever.
So, but for the book, would you say it's only for gay people?
Oh, no, of course not. I'll
tell you what, most of our listeners are straight people, so you should, so pitch it. What would a straight reader find from your book?
Well, I mean, the main characters, there are many straight characters in the book.
One of the characters is called Straightness.
Yes, Winter King, also known as Straightness, who is a major, major character in the book, and Kate Schuster, who, of course, is, you know, the straight fangirl of the story. Sex, drugs, and superheroes, it's funny, people always ask me about the sort of gay connection with superheroes, and I don't think there's so much a gay connection as there is the feeling of being an outsider, or being a freak, or just being weird. And that, to me, was more what was pushing me when I was writing it. That was the spirit and the idea that I sort of went in with. And so the main, you know, Liquin, the narrator, is gay, partially because I am gay myself, but also because, you know, if you're going to tell a story about being an outsider, you have to start with the ultimate outsider. So, therefore, Liquin has to be gay, because he just has to be so weird, you know, and such a reject from outside society that... That Comic-Con, finding Comic-Con in the sense of community that he achieves there is what makes it so special. So,
yeah, his main character's name, is it Liquin? Liquin?
Liquin.
Yeah. Liquin. Liquin Sonos?
Yeah.
Liquin Sonos.
I feel like he got his name from, like, a sacred Latin text. And...
No, well, Sonos is the Greek god of dreams. And so, you know, if this is sort of inspired by my memories and my feelings about Comic-Con, then, you know, it is sort of a dream. But Liquin, I don't know where the name Liquin came from, honestly. He was just there one day. You know, I was laying in bed staring up at my ceiling, and all of a sudden he was there, and that was when I was able to actually write the book. I've been trying to write it for years and couldn't get through the prologue. So... but when I found Liquin, I mean, I found the rest of the story. It just kind of came along, so...
So speaking of people in your book, what... Sigourney Weaver has a big presence in your book. Could you sort of tease that out and talk about that a little bit and where that came from?
Saint Sigs of the Weave? Yeah, I mean, she is... Saint Sigs of the Weave... There is nobody cooler than Sigourney Weaver. I mean, it just... There isn't. I mean, there's never been a cooler woman. There's never been a cooler man. There's never been, you know, she's such an amazing actress. She has so many great geeky films. I mean, she's sort of, you know, she is often an outsider herself, but she's tough. She's a survivor. That's what we geeks are. We're survivors in a world full of really boring people.
So I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but certainly what... Give us an idea of what role she plays. Is it like a figment? Is it a real, like, presence? What kind of role does she play?
It is a presence. I think the idea of Sigourney, and this comes from personal experience, certainly, the idea of her being Saint Sigs of the Weave, there's just something classy about her. And there's a certain intelligence along with the toughness that I think all geeks admire and sort of aspire to. She's sort of a spiritual icon for the characters, I would say, and for many geeks in real life, certainly.
So, does she play like almost like a Wong Fu role in the story? Like, you know, she's there in spirit always, and she is sort of this unattainable or attainable goal, but you know.
Yes, the Julie Newmar.
Yes.
Wong Fu, yeah, that's Aww. Definitely a good way of putting it.
Okay. So, okay, I feel you.
That on many levels, that's true. Yeah.
Cool.
And yes, and go ahead and touch on some other things that are in the book, because it's just like one crazy kind of thing after another. And like, what are some highlights you want to tell people about?
Oh gosh, well, I'd rather they read it and find out.
Tease them with something that like grabs them and makes them rush out and buy the book.
There's an orgy.
Well, there you go.
there's a geek orgy that I'm not going to, you know, describe in detail. It needs to be read to be believed. That's a lot of fun. It, you know, it covers the sort of the, I don't want to say infestation, but sort of the conquest of Comic-Con by Hollywood, the tension that exists between all these people who, you know, these creative people who are struggling themselves and who certainly admire the Hollywood establishment, but kind of resent it too, because it's like, this is our time for us, and you're stealing it away now, so.
Yeah, I like that. That's actually something I've, and this is why, San Diego has never had that allure, because it has become so much about Hollywood.
Well, it's true, and I think it's certainly happening to the other conventions too, to ApeCon, to WonderCon, which is, you know, the sister convention of Comic-Con. With comic book movies and superhero movies, and these adaptations sort of getting a higher degree of credibility. And you know, enormous box office receipts. Have you guys seen the numbers on Spider-Man? I mean, it's insane.
Or didn't Avengers, it just get like 140 just
this weekend?
Just this weekend,
I think.
Oh, total with probably the weekend and then during the week, yeah. Because it did 35 opening night, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty freaking huge considering it's a reboot that nobody really wanted. Right. But I'm glad they did it because I actually think it's the best of all the Spider-Man movies.
I've heard many people say
that. Oh, we're
going
to go on a tangent real quick because I definitely think Spider-Man 2 is the best, but I definitely love this new one and I can't wait to see, you know, it looks like they planned out a whole trilogy or even more instead of just one by one.
Yeah, I think they certainly know where they're going with it. You know, obviously bringing Gwen into it, and I don't want to spoil the movie, you know, for listeners who haven't seen it, but bringing Gwen Stacy into it is a brilliant move, you know, not in a Spider-Man 3 kind of way, but in a, for those of us that knows what happens to Gwen, there are actual stakes. Part of my problem with Spider-Man 2 is that you know nobody is going to get killed. I mean, you know Mary Jane has to survive. You know Aunt May has to survive. You know Harry has to survive because they're, like, obligatory. If you have Uncle Ben and you have Gwen Stacy and you have Captain Stacy and you have these sort of other characters that may not be as integral to the story beyond Spidey himself, who is destined to survive, of course, there's a chance that the status quo really could be, you know, screwed by the end, that he really could have to face some actual pain, which was, you know, there was never any dramatic tension for me. In the Raimi movies, you always knew everything was going to be okay at the end because he didn't have the balls to kill off a main character.
Right.
Somebody died in the Raimi movie. That one guy.
Well, Uncle Ben died.
Harry died in the third one.
In the third one, yeah, but... Yeah.
It was pretty ballsy to have a Spider-Man movie with no Mary Jane and no J. Jonah Jameson.
J. Jonah's not in it at all?
No. And no Bruce Campbell cameo. Can you believe it?
Thank heaven for that.
Hey.
But it is so distracting by the end. It is the big problem to me with the new Spider-Man movie is that they can't do anything that Raimi did. So just because they don't want to be compared to him. And that's understandable. But then the things that Raimi actually did very, very well, they kind of have to back away from. Like Jonah Jameson, you know, J.K. Simmons, you know, was terrific in that role.
Yes.
You know, Mary Jane, they never gave her anything to do in the Raimi movies except stand there in a wet t-shirt, and it's not the wet t-shirt I object to, it's just, you know, that she's worthless, and Kirsten Dunst is a good actress, so why not give her something to do?
Yeah.
They never did. Granted, Raimi was doing this 10 years ago, so it wasn't a foregone conclusion that there was going to be a Spider-Man 2 or 3 or 4, you know, or whatever, so he couldn't quite plan it out in the way these guys have, you know, no doubt planned out their series. Gwen Stacy, as played by Emma Stone, is far more interesting and far more compelling a character than Mary Jane ever was. So,
cool. Well, I've heard good things. But so let me ask you a question that do you read Bleeding Cool at all?
Ain't It Cool News?
No, not Ain't It Cool. Bleeding Cool.
Bleeding Cool. I don't believe I have.
It's sort of a spiritual successor to Ain't It Cool in a sense, but it's nowhere near as reputable, certainly, as Ain't It Cool has become. So Bleeding Cool
that may
does
be a good thing. I don't know.
Well, yes and no. Like, it's good, and it's, anyway, Bleeding Cool is the comics kind of insider rumor rag, if you will. It's like if Gawker did a comic book site.
Okay.
One of the things they post that I find hilarious and entertaining every time there's a major con is the Craigslist personals postings as found during the con.
Oh, God.
So you can imagine some of the things. They're kind of interesting. I'm not going to ask if you have ever frequented or seen any of the Craigslist postings, certainly.
I have not. I want to answer that and declare that now. I never have.
Well, I suggest you read this article when it comes out. It is fascinating because it's not just gay. It's gay and straight. And it's not all salacious. I mean, some of it's pretty straightforward. But they do get the best of the best. And so going along with your theme of, you know, sex, drugs, and superheroes, you know, at Comic-Con, one of the things, you know, you certainly have to acknowledge is a lot of horny people at a convention doing stupid things. And
Very true.
I've certainly heard of stories from, like, Dragon Con in Atlanta that can be kind of crazy. And I'm sure in your book, like you kind of alluded to, there's some craziness there. But Yeah.
What are the postings like? It says like Robin looking for Batman. Must bring utility belt.
If only. A lot of them are like, you know, straight looking for like they'll go to the con or whatever and they'll see someone. It's kind of like that whole, were you such and such, or if you're
misconnection.
Yeah. Like
looking for saucy Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Hot cat girl or cat woman that I saw, you know.
You wearing
me.
Princess Leia slave gear, me wearing Spock shirt, you know, from 1982, backpack and torn up jeans, glasses.
You know. Nice. Well, anyway, so you haven't seen that.
Let's do a mind meld later.
I don't know. What else?
I wanted to ask.
Please.
With all the craziness and sort of fun that goes along in your book, it actually takes sort of a dark turn for Liquin. And that was unexpected as I was reading it. So I guess I wanted to ask you, like, what was your decision to... This isn't, like, a fluffy book. This gets into, like, serious... some serious territory. And so what was your, like, creative decision, like, behind that?
That's a great question. And one of... I think the big thing was that, I sort of treated it like a superhero movie in that, you know, the fluffy ones, you know, are fine, but they need to be about something deeper. And one of the recurring themes, one of the things they talk about in the book so much is... comic books are American mythology. They are our equivalent of Zeus and Hera and Jupiter and Thor, as it were. So it needed to have a deeper level. But I think the other thing is that so many geeks, and certainly the character of Liquin, and it's true of Windsor and Brigham and Kate and, you know, all the main characters, they're creative people, and that's not always an easy thing to be. Especially when you're surrounded by extremely successful people that you admire. There's something cool about being able to interact with them, but it's also a reminder of, oh, hey, I'm not that successful and cool like they are. Liquin had to go through this existential crisis because it's much more... Oh, gosh, now I'm rambling. How do I explain it? It needed more to it. It can't just be a journal of Comic-Con. I mean, because you can read that on any website. It had to be somebody's personal story. And in order to have a real story, you have to have someone that goes through a change, that has to, you know, sort of face their own destiny and, you know, face the forces of change. And so that's just what he had to do, and I felt like in order to be honest to that, in order to be true to the character that I'd set up, it had to go that dark, because that's who he is. That makes sense.
No, yeah, right on.
It's the hero's journey.
I like that this book in itself is like a superhero story.
Yeah. So, they all have their dark moments and their dark places, and this one is, you know, much... more considerably, it's considerably lighter than I've been asked to do another one. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but if it ever happens, it's going to be a much, much darker book.
Well, I feel like, you know, every trip provides you with copious amounts of material.
Well, yeah, I mean, anything to Comic-Con, I mean, hell, there's so much that's happening there. And obviously, you know, it's all over the book. I mean, you know, the way that Comic-Con's changed, the way that the characters are changing, and the way they have to confront their own future. So,
what are you? So you're going, of course, to Comic-Con coming up, right?
Yes, I will be there all week, Wednesday to Sunday. I am signing Friday at 2 at the Prism Comics booth, which I believe is 1241, something like that. 2 o'clock, I will be signing. We have limited edition copies of print copies of Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes with special commemorative Comic-Con art that will be on sale there, and a portion of the proceeds will actually go to help young, struggling gay writers, so, that are not me.
Awesome, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, what are you, like, I know when Q went one year, we kind of, he said, well, here's what I'm planning to go to coming up. What are you most excited about seeing there?
Signing.
Well, besides your signing, of course. I mean, what else are you really excited about?
The Disney panel looks terrific this year with Oz the Great and Powerful, and I know they're doing something special on the new Tron television series, which I'm a huge Tron fan, so I'm really excited about that. Bruce Boxleitner is going to be there.
My
favorite.
At some
point, he became ultra cool. I don't know exactly when it happened, but
Bruce
the man's ultra cool.
Bruce has always been cool. I mean, I'm a Tron freak. I mean, you probably won't find too much of a bigger Tron fan. And Babylon 5. So,
yeah.
To say, Bruce has always been, you know, he has a special place in my heart. I saw him at MegaCon. I had a moment. Yeah. He was a lot cockier in person than I ever thought
really?
He would be. But I mean, he was funny, but he was cocky. And I'm just like, dude, you know, you're Bruce Boxleitner. You shouldn't be so cocky. But, you know, anyway.
Well, I know how much he got paid for Tron. He shouldn't be that cocky. But no. He's still cool.
He is. So that's cool. Yeah, no, what else is exciting?
The Disney stuff, the Warner Brothers stuff. Warner Brothers always does a great job with their panel. And, of course, they're previewing Man of Steel, and everyone's waiting with bated breath to see if Snyder, working with Nolan, can actually get a good Superman movie off the ground in today's day and age. I think there's some question as to whether or not you can make the character relevant.
No,
they're sinking a lot of money into it.
I'm super excited for that. More so than a lot of upcoming stuff. I want to see a big Superman, a really good Superman movie, I guess I should say. Superman Returns was one of the bigger cinematic disappointments in the past, a few decades, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people who just out and out hate it. I don't hate it. It's an admirable misfire. There's a lot that I admire in it, but it's, you know, fatally flawed by two uncharismatic leads. And just by virtue of the fact that it's so beholden to the Donner movies that all you can think about is the Donner movies while you're watching Superman Returns and how this is not that cool, and that's not Christopher Reeve, and that's not Margot Kidder, and this isn't as much fun as those were.
Right.
So why aren't they just doing something new? Because we've kind of seen it all before.
Bryan Singer just wanted to write that love letter, and he got it out of his system.
Well, he wrote it, and it's affectionate, and it's out there, and it costs $300 million.
Damn.
And crazy. There you go, David Reddish, proving he can talk the talk, for knows everything, knows all the ins and outs, and that's just a little taste of that of the book. So, so where can people get the book?
They can get it on Amazon. They can get it on Barnes & Noble. It's available for download. You can go to sexdrugsuperheroes.com, and you can get a link to both of those pages. Or you can come out to Comic-Con on Friday, the 13th, and get a copy there.
Definitely check out the website. What was the website again?
It's sexdrugsuperheroes.com.
Yeah, and you can see David did these cool promotional things of, different characters.
The photographs.
Yes, they're really cool.
No, they are really neat. Do you actually have an Ouroboros tattoo on you? Or was that
No, that was airbrushed on.
Nice.
But the Ouroboros, it's funny you mentioned that, because that's actually a tease for part 2. And ultimately part 3 of Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, the Ouroboros, which is hinted at with this, you know, Smashing Pumpkins song, The End is the Beginning is the End, is a major motif throughout the whole book. You know, it's the song that everyone has stuck in their heads. But it which refers to the sort of cyclical nature of time, and which is apropos, I think, for comic books, because they're kind of these self-renewing
Yes.
Loops. Nobody is ever dead forever. You know, of course Jean Grey is going to come back from the dead. Of course Jason Todd's going to come back from the dead. Of course someone's going to die and be back a year later. Mm-hmm. You know, they sort of, the status quo is, it's never really upset for very long. And the Ouroboros is you know, a transcendent symbol of that for the characters. So,
what are you guys saying, Aurora Borealis?
Ouroboros. It's the snake eating its tail, Q.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's our cue. Well,
and on that cue.
Well, Dave, we really appreciate you coming on. And Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes is really exciting. I'm thrilled that you are doing this cool stuff out there, being a fellow UCF Central Florida graduate.
Oh, you are too.
I am, and we all are here.
Yeah, huh? I don't want to give anyway clues to my past, but there's a big one.
Well, considering we used to call it You Can't Finish, so there have only been a handful of us to make it out of there.
Exactly.
Yes, or under construction forever.
But
no, that's also true.
You and the guy who wrote Surrogates, David Vitteretti? Anyway, we met him at HeroesCon. I mean, two great UCF success stories, you can finish and do great things. But no, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And even though we won't be there in person, we'll be there in spirit, and certainly we'll blow up, you know, Facebook and, you know, promote this as much as we can. So,
by all means, and it's getting good reviews. I just want to point that out to the 90 publishers who rejected it.
No.
Oh.
Well,
that's my one bitter moment. We just The Advocate this week named it we're on the hot list, actually.
So awesome.
Yeah, I saw them.
That's fantastic.
One of the hot things of the week. And in fact, I'm officially this week hotter than Channing Tatum.
What? So, no.
Nice.
No.
I beat Channing Tatum on the list. I am not as hot as Glenn Close, but I am hotter than
Tatum. You know, that's a great byline or a great thing to say. You know, I'm hotter than Channing Tatum.
Yeah, put it on your Twitter. Oh, yeah. His Twitter is The Gay Magneto.
The Gay Magneto.
Follow him.
The website's sexdrugssuperheroes.com. The book is Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, A Savage Journey into a Wretched Hive of Scum and Supervillainy.
Fantastic. Well, again, thanks so much. And
wait.
Oh, you're going to do that?
Yes, I'm going to do it.
Jesus.
Actually, this is sort of a test, too. Hey, David, have you ever listened to an episode of Flame On?
Yeah.
Okay, how do we end every episode?
Oh, crap.
You're setting yourself up for failure here, my friend.
See,
do you remember?
The one I listened to was where you guys talked about Prometheus, and it was like 2.5 hours long.
What?
You didn't make it to the end?
You know, when you were signing off, I had to actually, I was doing this at the studio, so I actually had to get up and look busy. So when you guys were winding down, I actually just kind of cut it off. I'm like, okay, they're done. And
okay. I'll give you a hint. We say the opposite of flame on.
Which is flame out.
Oh, it's new.
Oh,
see,
don't mind that.
We've had people say ice off. What did comic book geek say?
I think he said ice off.
Yeah, was he ice off? Anyway.
And we're dragging this out way too long. Flame out. I'll take
flame out.
Flame out.
Flame out.